Now that you're an expert.
I don't know how to push buttons.
Is there the seconds ticking by?
The seconds are ticking by. Just to go back and real quickly. The circuit of the stars is obviously a circle. And it's the ecliptic that the sun follows through in the heavens. And so that's what that line is. It's where the line, it follows through, and then it shows the variance of it because of that other dotted line. And so the question is, the ancients that received this before the flood, really all the way back to Seth and Enos are the ones that did this, maybe even all the way back to Adam. Remember, they lived 900 years, and so they saw much more than we will ever see. And God showed them, and he says he gave names to all the stars. But, in thinking ahead, if someone lost it for a while, where do you begin and where do you start? Because it's a circle. So the only two structures that predate the flood are the Great Pyramid of Giza, which is totally different than any other pyramid, and the Sphinx. And the purpose of the Great Pyramid is the revelation of Christ, but so is the Sphinx. The Sphinx shows us it's a head of a woman and the body of a lion. So it shows us for the circuit of the stars, you start in Virgo and you end at Leo. Now, the biggie about Virgo, it's a virgin. She's a virgin in all cultures. In fact, the great, in Athens, the great Parthenon, that incredible building, is when you go up there and look at it, you find out it's a temple devoted to the virgin. Anyhow, what happened was, 65 million years ago, look at the first decan of Virgo, is Coma. You see that it's you see Virgo?
I see Virgo, yeah.
Okay.
Where is that Coma on her body?
No.
It's the child.
Child sitting.
Okay, I see Coma.
Okay, well, 65 million years ago, a star supernovaed in the head of the child. Now, on the earlier star maps, it showed the child in a different position, but that didn't matter. It took 65 million years for that light to reach Persia, where the Magi were, so that they would see it in time to take the 9 months for them to get to Bethlehem before Jesus and Mary left with Jesus for Egypt. So it's the economy of God in unbelievable perfection. And so the three wise men followed that star. And the star, because of the prophecies, Daniel was the teacher for the guy named Zoroaster, who was the author of the book, the Zend Avesta, which is the Persian holy book. And in that, it has the prophecies and numbers about the Messiah and the star. And so they knew that the longitude of the was in Israel. They didn't know the latitude. So that's why they went to Herod to see where he was to be born. And Herod told him Bethlehem when he called his counselors. And so they went to Bethlehem and they couldn't find him. And then they were watering their cattle or their camels in the middle of at noon one day. And as they were watering, they looked down in David's well, which is the well that all kinds of things happened at. And they saw at the bottom of the well, because you see the sky at the bottom of the well, they saw the star. And then right next to the well was this cave. But it was much more than a cave. It was a cavern where the animals to be slaughtered for the sacrifice in Jerusalem were kept during the winter. And they weren't, it wasn't winter then, but that's where the cavern was. And in the front of the cavern, they had a living quarters for the shepherds. And that's where Christ was born, in the cavern that was set aside for the animals for sacrifice. And they...
Oh, my.
So, I mean, it's on and on and on.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, we could go on and on even more so. There was a tower right out... Bethlehem is just 12 miles from the temple. And there was a tower just adjacent to Bethlehem. And in that tower is where the shepherds that were assigned by the temple to make sure that the cattle and sheep that were destined for sacrifice, they couldn't go beyond Jerusalem, I mean Bethlehem, or they wouldn't be accepted. And so the shepherds that were watching, their job was to watch for Messiah. They weren't just normal shepherds.
I'm sorry, Harry.
Anyway, that's the beginning for Virgo. But tonight, we start on... Remember, I told you before, maybe you don't remember, that the 12 signs are really made up of 3 books. And each of the 3 books has 4 chapters. And the chapters are the sign itself, and then the 3 decans associated with each sign. And now we are beginning on the 4th decan. Now the first decan was about Christ and his humiliation and his suffering and his sacrifice. The second decan, those four signs, were about the church. But now from Taurus onward, it's about Christ in no longer as the Lamb, but now this fierce being to wreak judgment on the world because of sin.
So that's the second set of 4 chapters.
No, this is the third book.
Oh, okay.
The last book.
The last book, all right.
Breath.
Okay?
Okay.
Now everybody find Taurus. It's interesting because if you've got the legend down at the right at the left hand corner as you normally would read, then you go down and the one at the very bottom is Scorpio. And then straight above Scorpio is Taurus. Mm-hmm. And now the Taurus and Scorpio never appear at the same time in the heavens, which is a whole other story, which we'll get into later. But Taurus is the bull, and he has the first decan of Taurus is Orion. And then the river Eridanus, that looks like a snake or something under Orion. See the stars? Well, that's a river. And then, so Orion's the first decan, Eridanus is another one, and I forgot the third one, which you'll find. We're not going to get there for a couple of days, probably a couple of weeks anyway. So anyway... Let's start all this by going to Psalm 92. You could have gotten Pete. He's young, relatively speaking.
Yeah. This group. Anybody else need a bow?
I hear the only one that screwed up.
Psalm 92. Now, Psalm 92 has a position above every other psalm in the Bible. Put your
put the chart away from me. I feel like I'm a teacher in first grade, students. Get your Bibles out. Psalm 92. The ancients all agreed on one thing, that Psalm 92 was written by Adam, which is interesting. What? What kind of look
Adam
is that?
The first Adam?
Adam.
Psalm 92? See how they fit that in?
While you're talking, I'm going to grab a napkin.
Well, David wrote a bunch of psalms, but there were at least 10 authors for the psalms. Probably 12, if you really study it.
Who arranged them?
Well, they were arranged as they are now by Ezra and Nehemiah. And they also established the 3-year cycle of readings and all that kind of stuff.
That's what we should do.
What?
That's what I'd like to take up. We've never done a 3-year cycle. Once,
only say that again now. It's accepted tradition in what, the Talmud, that Psalm 92 was
not just the Talmud, the Midrash and the Talmud and all the ancient writings, that Psalm 92 was written by Adam.
Okay.
Now, Psalm 92, the first part, let's just read it. Let's read it. It's a good thing to give thanks unto the Lord and to sing praises unto thy name, O Most High. For show forth thy loving kindness in the morning and thy faithfulness every night, upon an instrument of 10 strings, and upon the psaltery, and upon the harp with a solemn sound. For thou hast made me glad through thy work. I will triumph in the works of thy hands. O Lord, how great are thy works, and thy thoughts are very deep. So the first 5 verses reveal the creation and the greatness of creation, and it celebrates the glory and the blessings of God. Well, in verse 6, it starts a new theme. A brutish man knoweth not, neither doth a fool understand this. When the wicked, and it really means, it says the wicked one, literally, when the wicked one spring as the grass, and when all the workers of iniquity do flourish, and every time you see the word iniquity in the Hebrew, it's avin, it means self-seeking, self-realization. When all the workers of iniquity do flourish, is that they shall be destroyed forever. But thou, Lord, art most high forevermore. For lo, thine enemies, O Lord, for lo, thine enemies shall perish, and the workers of iniquity shall be scattered. So from verse 7, or from verse 6 to the first part of 7, I should have stopped. That's the first part of 7. What happened? What did I do?
Get a brain fart.
Yeah, the first verses 6 and 7, the first part, reveal a time of great apostasy. The wicked are prospering. The workers of iniquity are doing well. And then the second part is, it is that they shall be destroyed forever. From the second part, the second sentence of 7, all the way down through verse 11. Let's read those. It's the destruction of the of iniquity.
Start. You want me to read only from 7?
Yeah.
From 7.
It's where it says it is they that.
It is they
That shall be destroyed
forever. That shall be destroyed forever. But thou, Lord, art most high forevermore. For lo, thine enemies, O Lord, for lo, thine enemies shall perish. All the workers of iniquity shall be scattered. But my horn shalt thou exalt like the horn of a unicorn. I shall be anointed with fresh oil. Mine eye also shall see my desire on mine enemies, and my ears shall hear thy desire of the wicked, that they rise up against me.
Okay. So from those verses, all show the overthrow and destruction of the enemies. Then from verse 12 to 15, it shows the meaning of Sabbath, and that's why it's the Sabbath Psalm. The psalm is read every Sabbath. So read from 12 through 15.
The righteousness shall flourish like the palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those that be planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bring forth fruit in old age. They shall be fat and flourishing. To show that the Lord is upright, he is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him.
Okay. So it shows those four sections, just like the stars do. Now, go to verse 10. But my horn shall thou exalt like the horn of a unicorn. Now, that's a bad translation. And that's what we're really studying tonight, is that horn, the unicorn. The Hebrew word translated as unicorn is rheem, R-H-E-E-M. It occurs 9 times in the Old Testament. The rheem was a wild ox, and it said that this oxen was so big that he couldn't fit in the ark. And so in the ark were his two children, or two whelps of the oxen, or the bull, if you will. But he was tied to the ark. And drug him along. And it created a wake as wide as the Sea of Tiberias. That's what it says in the Talmud.
Looks like he would have drowned anyway.
Now, in the days of Rabbi Chaya Bar Abba, a reem whelp, or in what we now here call unicorn, a weaned whelp invaded Israel. It did not leave a single tree standing, which had not rooted up.
What's the definition of reem? Is it like rhema?
No, reem is the name of this beast that's no longer existent. And that's what we're studying. This beast, this bull, this tauros, is this monster beast that no longer exists.
And we're that's my wife's sign.
Huh?
That's Laura's sign.
It is. Forget that crap. If you ever say that again in here, that astrology bullshit.
What sign are you?
Oh, get out of here.
Did you read the paper to find out what you were supposed to do today?
My sign's not on here, Ollie. I'm an eagle.
Everybody tells
you're
me
also
I'm
bullshit,
a,
too.
I'm a feces.
Oh, you don't admit that.
In the days of Rabbi Chaya Bar Abba, a reem whelp invaded Israel. It did not leave a single tree standing which it did not uproot. A fast was proclaimed, and Rabbi Chaya prayed, whereupon its mother bellowed from the desert, and the whelp went down to the desert at her voice and saved Israel. Now, these things are something else.
It's like Nick gone amok.
Now, the reem was hunted much like the buffalo was in this country. It became extinct in the 16th century. Records show it was hunted at the time of Julius Caesar, They were at one time common in Northwest Asia, Assyria, and Southern Europe. Remains of them have recently been discovered. It was known as the primeval oxen or the wild bull. In Western culture, it's known as Aurochs, A-U-R-O-C-H, Aurochs. They were immortalized in the prehistoric cave dwellings, especially those in France. They're said to be only slightly smaller than an elephant. They were so fierce so as not to spare man or beast when sighted. They could not be tamed, no matter how and how young they were caught. And we're going to go to all these in a minute.
That's fascinating.
Caesar wrote, he wrote this, he said, when a hunter succeeds in killing one, and by the only way they were able to kill him were pitfalls. They had to make these big traps in the earth, and they'd have to put the stakes in them. He made a great public exhibition of the horns, which were the wonder and praise of all who beheld. Now Joseph is likened to the ring, to the tribe of Joseph. We'll see it in a minute when we go through it. And which his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, were the two horns. The names in this of this sign in all ancient languages means the same as the English name, the bull. But not a bull as we've known them. If you look at the sign, the horns are greater and they're set differently. And look at the, see, I don't know if this one shows it very well, but in most of them it shows the teeth, the bare teeth, and it's full of energy. And it's fierce, wild, untamable. And if this expresses the symbol of Christ, as the irresistible and angry judge. This is where he's no longer the lamb. And that's in Revelation, they talk about everybody was afraid because of the wrath of the lamb. Well, this is, and I want you to notice something very strange. Just as when we studied Capricorn, let's go back to Capricorn. It shows the goat dying and a fish being born out of it. Well, look at this one. The lamb is alive and well and looking at the bull, and the bull comes out of the lamb in the sign. You see that?
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Now, if you want to know the fear of God, concentrate on what we're going to study the next few weeks. Because the last book is about the fear of God. Okay? He is coming out of the lamb in rage. He has the appearance of dashing forward with, and his head down with swift and impetuous energy. His horn set as if to run through everything that comes his ways.
Right along the circuit of the heavens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he looks pissed.
I've got a picture of the Taurus, and the face is here is kind of covered. It doesn't show him well, but it's just this fierce looking animal coming at you like.
What are all the little stars of where
that's the sweet Pleiades.
The
what? The Pleiades.
Pleiades.
They're talked about in the scriptures. Right. Now let's look at some of these scriptures that we've been talking about, where it says the unicorn, so you can see it isn't the unicorn it's talking about. All right. Let's start in, well, since we're in the Psalms, let's go back and look at Psalm 22. Now, you got to understand, Psalm 22 is called the crucifixion psalm. Let's just read it, because it's so important. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Nick, because of the experience that Nick just had, I want you to read this, understand this, okay?
This happened before I got here, or was this some other time?
Nick had a fear of God experience that changed him substantially.
That I know about.
My God, why hast thou forsaken me?
My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Why art thou so far from helping me and from the words of my roaring? O my God, I cry in the daytime, but thou hearest not, and in the night season, and am not silent. But thou art holy, O thou that inhabitest the praises of Israel. Our fathers trusted in thee. They trusted, and thou didst deliver them. They cried unto thee, and were delivered. They trusted in thee, and were not confounded. But I am a worm, and no man, a reproach of men, and despised of the people. All they that see me laugh me to scorn. They shoot out the lip. They shake their head, saying, He trusted on the Lord that he would deliver him. Let him deliver him, seeing he delighted in him. But thou art he that took me out of the womb. Thou didst make me hope when I was upon my mother's breast. I was cast upon thee from the womb. Thou art my God from my mother's belly. Be not far from me, for trouble is near. For there is none to help. Many bulls have compassed me. Strong bulls of Bashan have beset me around. They gaped upon me with their mouths as a ravening and a roaring lion.
Now the bulls there are not the bulls that we're studying. These are the bulls, the mockers of Christ and the mockers of us.
I am poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint. My head is like wax. It is melted in the midst of my bowels. My strength is dried up like a potsherd, and my tongue cleaveth to my jaws, and thou hast brought me into the dust of death. For dogs have compassed me. The assembly of the wicked have enclosed me.
For dogs.
Didn't I say dogs? For dogs, I said it in the exact accent. For dogs have compassed me. The assembly of the wicked have enclosed me. They pierced my hands and my feet. I may tell all my bones, they look and stare upon me. They part my garments among them and cast lots upon my vesture. But be not thou far from me, O Lord, O my strength. Haste thee to help me. Deliver my soul from the sword, my darling from the power of the dog. Save me from the lion's mouth, for thou hast heard me from the horns of the unicorn.
From the horns of this massive bull.
I will declare thy name unto my brethren. In the midst of the congregation I will praise thee.
Okay, that's all. What's next?
Yeah, that's just an identical iteration of what Christ said and did.
That's why it's called the crucifixion psalm.
It's just, I mean, it's almost a verbatim.
All right, go to Psalm 29. give unto me the Lord. Give unto the Lord, O ye mighty. Give unto the Lord glory and strength. Give unto the Lord the glory due unto his name. Worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. The voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The God of glory thundereth. The Lord is upon many waters. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty. The voice of the Lord breaketh the cedars. Yea, the Lord breaketh the cedars of Lebanon. He maketh them also to skip like a calf, Lebanon and Sirion, like a young unicorn. Now that's it. I mean, it's just another place where unicorn is mentioned. Let's go to, you've all heard this, what this beast was like. So let's go to see where God sort of mocks us. Go to Job 39. Job is just before Psalms. We're just going to read a couple of verses. Let's remember we studied Leviathan. And Leviathan is this Cetus beast?
The deep one from underneath the bug out of the ocean.
The ugliest one.
Big Pete.
Canst thou draw out Leviathan with a hook, or his tongue with a cord which thou lettest down? Can thou put a hook in his nose, or bore his jaw through with a thorn?
Where did you start reading from?
Yeah, we're confused.
Oh, wait a minute, I was the wrong. I was reading another one. It's yeah. 39. It's God is challenging. Yeah, but that was fun. I like that one. I like it going, but God mocks us. Knowest thou the time when the wild goats of the rock bring forth? Or can thou mark when the hinds do calve? Can thou number the months that they fulfill? Or knowest thou the time when they bring forth? They bow themselves, they bring forth their young ones, they cast out their sorrows. Their young ones are in good liking, they grow up with corn. They go forth and return not unto them. Who has sent out the wild ass free? Who has sent out the wild ass free? Or who hath loosed the bands of the wild ass? Whose house I have made the wilderness and the barren land his dwelling? Whose house I have made? Never mind. I see it. He scorneth the multitude of the city, neither regardeth he the crying of the driver. The range of the mountains is his pasture, and he bringeth forth after every green thing. Now, will the unicorn, now remember, this is this wild, humongous, slightly smaller than an elephant bull, with these massive horns like no other horns. Will this beast be willing to serve thee, or to abide by thy crib, or by thy bed? Can thou bind the beast with his band in the furrow? Or will he harrow the valleys after thee? In other words, can you tame him to plow fields for you?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's just another place where it's talked about. All right, let's go see Joseph. Go to Deuteronomy 33. Now, if you read the whole of Deuteronomy 33, you see where they got the idea that each one of the 12 tribes of Israel, their leader, had one of the signs of the zodiac on their staff. And Joseph had the sign of the Taurus. All right, and verse 13. And of Joseph he said, and this is on his, Moses is on his, I mean, yeah, Moses is on his deathbed. He's not going to be able to see him go into the promised land. And yet he blessed each one of the 12 tribes and said, and so of Joseph he said, you know, Joseph split, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he has one,
Ephraim
and Manasseh became his two sons because Levi didn't have any promise. He didn't have any inheritance in the land. And so the 12 then became, because Joseph split. All right. And of Joseph he said, blessed of the Lord be his land, for the precious things of heaven, for the dew, and for the deep that coucheth beneath, and for the precious fruit brought forth by the sun, and for the precious things put forth by the moon, and for the chief things of the ancient mountains, and for the precious things of the lasting hills, and for the precious things of the earth and fullness thereof, and for the good will of him that dwelt in the bush. Let the blessing come upon the head of Joseph, and upon the top of the head of him that was separated from his brethren. His glory is like the firstling of his bullock, and his horns are like the horns of a unicorn. This ream, or this... And when he shall push the people together to the ends of the earth, for they are in the 10,000s of Ephraim and the 1,000s of Manasseh. And so Joseph, well, he's pushing them to the ends of the earth, is what he said, using with his horns and these big horns. All right, let's look at Numbers 23. Does everybody know what these books of Numbers are like? For Numbers, Genesis is before, when it was the whole earth. Exodus is the call of Abraham. I mean, the really about after they leave Egypt. The law was first given in Exodus. And then it was given in Leviticus, again, more precisely. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. Numbers was given. Numbers shows us their trek in the wilderness. And so if you want to read how to conduct your life, read Numbers. That's what this thing about doubt is so important. If the cloud is down, you do nothing. And that's Numbers 9:15-23. But Deuteronomy is important because they were just about to enter the land. And they had forgotten the original law because they'd been out in the wilderness all this time for 40 years. And so so that's the purpose. Deuteronomy means second law. And so it just means it was repeated just before they went into the promised land. And so then Joshua is the name of the book, in the first book in the Promised Land, and that Joshua corresponds to our book, the New Testament book of Ephesians. It's the glory of the Promised Land. All right. So we're in, where did I say go? Numbers.
Numbers 23.
Numbers 23. Verse 18, and he took up his parable and said, rise up, Balak, and hear, hearken unto me, thou son of Zippor. God is not a man that he should lie, neither the son of man that he should repent. Hath he said, and he shall not do it? Or hath he spoken, and it shall not be made, and shall he not make it good? Behold, I have received commandment to bless, and he hath blessed, and I cannot reverse it. He hath not beheld iniquity in Jacob, neither hath he seen perverseness in Israel. The Lord is his God is with him, and the shout of a king is among them. God brought them out of Egypt. He hath, as it were, the strength of a unicorn, or as a this massive beast.
Let me ask you a question now. Obviously, the word reem, where is the word reem found in the ancient documents?
Every time you look in the Old Testament and see unicorn, it's reem.
But at what point in time was it reem? Or has it...
It was always reem. But the translators didn't know what to do with it.
But that's what I'm asking. If someone were to go to either the Talmud or Mishnah, what happened, they would see reem.
Right.
And so when they translated in these editions, unicorn took its place.
Right, because it said in one place the singular, the horn, in Psalm 92. And so the unicorn was a fanciful animal at the time of King James.
Something they could tie it to. It was a visual.
I got to mention quickly,
the air conditioner.
David Wilkerson, everything this guy sends me an email every morning, I'm telling you, it could be only sending it. And this guy's.
He must have really changed from what I knew.
Even his last email, his granddaughter, 12, she died. And just before she passed, she was in, I guess, a mild coma. And when she came out of the coma, she said, "I'm ready to go home. I saw Jesus." And then she went. And he says in his last email, he's not playing, and things will get better. He says, "Whether we live or die, we belong to Jesus." And it's just wow, you know.
Amen.
It's everything. It's wow. Yeah. It's just so special.
It's true. Yeah, that's what I've heard. He's really changed.
He's changed.
You know, preaches the cross.
Preaches that cross.
Okay, let's go to Psalm 20. Go to Numbers 24.
Where Psalm 24?
Numbers.
Numbers 24.
We're already there. You closed your Bible.
No, I.
And when Balaam saw that it was, what's ready to
be? In verse 8, we're just going to read two verses. God brought him forth out of Egypt. He hath, as it were, the strength of a unicorn. He shall eat up the nations, his enemies, and shall break their bones and pierce them through with his arrows. He couched, he lay down as a lion and as a great lion, and who shall stir him up? Blessed is he that blesseth thee, and cursed is he that curseth thee.
Now, only can you comment initially the unicorn, but then it talks about the lion. Is that the Lord morphing?
Again, we'll see that. See, then there we go. The last sign is the lion.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's showing we can't think linearly now. You have to think non-linearly. It's not a series of things that all agree with each other. It's a series of pictures and series of stories and parables, all revealing one thing.
Tunnel of judgment.
That is fantastic.
All right. Let's do one thing. Let's just do one thing. If I can find it. All of this now is about the judgment. Now the judgment, I know it's like the book of Revelation, the judgment and the plagues. The plagues are going on all the time. Judgment is going on all the time. But we think of it in terms of, well, it's going to happen this way, this time, and we have little charts. And so, no, judgment is going on all the time. So this the the fullness of all this is going on all the time. You understand? So let's read, go to Isaiah 34. And we'll there's so much in Torah, so it's going to take us a while to get through it. But this is, now this is judgment. And it, when it says nations in the Hebrew and in the Old Testament, the word nations is just, it's a Hebrew word, am, A-M. It just means the people. It doesn't necessarily talk into Haiti or something like that. Come near, ye nations, to hear, and hearken, ye people. Let the earth hear, and all that is therein, the world, and the things that come forth of it. For the indignation of the Lord is upon all nations, and his fury upon all their armies. He hath utterly destroyed them. He hath delivered them to the slaughter. Their slain also shall be cast out, and their stink shall come up out of their carcasses, and the mountains shall be melted with their blood. And all the host of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll, and their host shall fall down, and the leaf fall as the leaf falleth from the tree or the vine, and as a falling fig from fig trees. For my sword shall be bathed in heaven. Behold, it shall come down upon Edomia, and upon the people of my curse to judgment. And Edomia is just another word for Israel. The sword of the Lord is filled with blood. It is made fat with fatness, and with the blood of lambs and goats, and with the fat of kidneys of rams. For the Lord has a sacrifice in Bozra, and a great slaughter in the land of Edomia. And the unicorns, or the shall come down with them, and the bullocks with the bulls, and their land to be soaked with blood, and their dust made fat with fatness. For it is the day of the Lord's vengeance, and the year of recompense for the controversy of Zion.
Let me borrow this. You got a pen, Pete? Anybody got
it? It's right there.
So this is like the blood in Revelation coming up to the bride. This is like,
yeah,
the same.
Same thing.
Same thing.
Now, just real quickly, we'll quit here in a minute. I know that, but let's go to Isaiah 61. This is the first thing that Jesus said when he first talked in a synagogue. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me. 61. Isaiah 61.
What?
When I say just 61, it always means one. All right? The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because the Lord hath anointed me to preach good tidings unto the meek. He hath sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of prison to them that are bound, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord, and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all that mourn. Now, he stopped at to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. He didn't finish the sentence when he spoke it in Nazareth, in Luke. Because it was the day of vengeance of our God couldn't happen until they killed his son. Okay?
Repeat that again, only.
Verse 2.
Okay.
Jesus, when he wrote, go to Luke 4 real quick, and keep your hand in Isaiah.
All right, Luke 4.
Verse 18. This is, he came to Nazareth where he was brought up, and went into the synagogue. There was a lot of curiosity about him, so he asked him to speak. In verse 18, and this is what he said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, and to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. And he closed the book. He didn't finish. He didn't say the day of vengeance of our God, because he couldn't say that until they killed him, because human race still had a chance. But now the human race has no chance. All right?
All right.
Congratulations on your wells, by the way. That looks good.
Yeah.
Will you, anybody have any other comments about all this besides Burnett's wells? All right. Take it, big guy.